Murray back to throw, flushed out, rolling left in trouble, slips a tackle, got to launch it. He does. Left side, into the end zone, jump ball, and it is. Is it caught? Oh, my goodness, it's caught. DeAndre Hopkins caught it. He caught it for a touchdown with 1 second left. I can't believe it. You've got to be joking me.
They're calling it the Hail Murray. A prayer thrown up by Kyler and answered by DeAndre Hopkins with a miraculous catch among and above three defenders. Today, our favorite former NFL cornerback, Dominique Foxworth, breaks down how a play like that even happens, as well as the rest of the chaos of Week 10. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, November 16th. This is ESPN Daily. Dominique, it is 11:27 p.m. Eastern, and I am almost done tattooing Kyler Murray's name using a ballpoint pen across my chest.
Go for it. I'm with you. You want me to wait while you finish?
You're being supportive in a way that Bill Barnwell, who I usually talk to right now, isn't. I think like he would be reasonable and discourage me from doing this, but you're a far less responsible character. It feels.
Oh yeah. I'm here for a good time. Not a long time. I'm just here for today's episode. So I'm Funko Fox, ready for some fun. Tattoo it. Let's have some drinks, whatever you want to do, Pablo.
Dominique Foxworth is a writer and commentator for ESPN. He played 7 seasons in the NFL at defensive back, and he's ESPN Daily's fun uncle. Well, what I want to do before we get hammered together is talk to you about this play that has inspired all of this ink to be spilled, both across my chest and across the country, because I think it's the play of the year. I think what we saw in this Bills-Cardinals game is the play of the year, and it's worth noting for posterity that the Bills had just won said game. Right before it happened, Josh Allen had thrown, I think, the pass of his life to Stephon Diggs, putting Buffalo up 30-26 with just 39 seconds left.
The snap. Allen looks to his left, fires left side, in go to the end zone. Stephon Diggs makes a catch. Touchdown, Buffalo. Touchdown, Stephon Diggs catches the touchdown pass from Josh Allen. 21 yards.
But what Kyler Murray then does, rolling left. Let's hit pause as his bomb is launched from midfield and is dangling in the air, because you are a cornerback in your blood, in your soul. How do you even approach defending this sort of a play as a DB?
Well, they did it wrong, obviously. So they were all going for the ball, which you don't necessarily want to do in that situation. And Trey White was one of the best corners in the league. Looked like he was trying to catch it, which any coach will tell you, bat it down. So everyone's out there trying to pad their stats. And the thing that I would normally do, not that DeAndre Hopkins is a particularly big receiver, but tall receivers who jump well, I go for their arms. Can't necessarily catch a deep bomb like that with one hand. If you do, that's one for you. So that's what they kind of did wrong, going for the ball and also trying to pad your stats with an interception. But I was particularly happy towards the end of that game because on Get Up last week, I said that Stephon Diggs is unstoppable in man coverage.
The way you shut down passing offenses in this league, we all know it. It's tight man coverage. You can't do that against Stephon Diggs. He has been created the most explosive plays of any receiver in this league against man coverage.
So he caught the game-winning touchdown man coverage. I also said in that same segment that DeAndre Hopkins is the best contested catch receiver in the league.
He is one of the top receivers in the league in winning contested catches. So he can get open, but the scary part about him is it doesn't matter. You put it anywhere in his vicinity. Even if you're close to him, you're by him, he might bring it down and embarrass you.
Boom. So win for me. How about that? Back-to-back dub-dub.
What is it like in that locker room after this game, among those DBs in specific? You have 3 of them. That's a unique dynamic because blame is then cut into this glorious 3-way pie of shame. What do you think that's like?
I mean, blame is not something that you ever really distribute inside a locker room. It's just quiet. Everybody knows. You don't have to tell people. Normally, in that situation, the guys will feel bad. And as someone who's given up a game-winning touchdown before, people just come over and say nice things, which makes it hurt even more. They're like, don't worry about it. You'll be all right. The man made a good play. They get paid, too. We got you, dog. Stuff like that. That just is like, just leave me the hell alone. I know I sucked. It's fine. We all suck sometimes. I suck tonight. Leave me alone.
Well, if you're looking for honesty, thankfully, DeAndre Hopkins is not pulling any punches, as shame goes. In his post-game presser, he compared this to a basketball play, to him dunking on three people at the same time in specific.
You know, in basketball terminology, that's what they call this. You know, when somebody get dunked on. But it was on three people. That was, they were in position. It was just a better catch by Ivy.
Does that comparison, does that sound right to you?
I still think that getting dunked on is more embarrassing than that particular play, because there's just this shame, this helmetless shame of someone rocking on your head and you fall to the ground while they step over you. Sometimes the crotch is involved. It is just terribly uncomfortable. So this is less embarrassing, but probably more painful in the long run.
But Dominique, looking around the MVP race, I imagine that the result of this play is that Kyler Murray gets to clamber onto the medal stand alongside like Pat Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers, I guess, after Sunday's day of chaos. So does that sort of company this season for Kyler Murray, does that sound about right to you?
It sounds right. And I like how you just removed Russell Wilson from that conversation. A couple bad weeks and you are out of the Pablo Powell rankings. Huh?
Well, we're going to get to Russell Wilson in a second, but you're okay with Kyler Murray being elevated onto even a bronze medal at this point.
Absolutely. I mean, we all know that the MVP award is more about a protagonist for the season and less about the best player, because I think we all would agree that Patrick Mahomes is the best player. The numbers would agree that Patrick Mahomes is the best player. But Kyler Murray's team is doing well, and he has this weird little bit of serendipity on his side. In the last two seasons, second-year starters went on to win the MVP with outstanding seasons. Kyler Murray is also in his second year as a starter, and he's having a better season than I think most people expected, though he was one of the players who some analysts liked for MVP early in his season. He is putting it all together in a way that I'm not sure that any of us could have anticipated.
So for Josh Allen then, who was where Kyler is in that MVP conversation for about, he was there for like 39 seconds exactly, actually, but the guy caught a touchdown in this game. He lasered that beautiful would-be game winner to Stephon Diggs. He also lobbed up what would have been an interception for like no reason while being tackled, which is also very classic Josh Allen. So as a football investment advisor, what kind of a stock is Josh Allen at this point to you?
Oh, Josh Allen is a volatile one. Like, you cannot predict how high he's going to be in one moment or how low he will be in the next moment. But you need to sell when he is high. Because in this particular game, he wasn't all that good. The numbers suggest that he was good. The game-winning touchdown suggests that he was good. That one interception while he was – or near interception while he was being sacked to a running back between three defenders wasn't good. Patrick Peterson dropped two interceptions and still managed to catch one. That wasn't good. So I think that – the Bills, frankly, deserve to lose. They almost stole one, but they deserve to lose because I don't think Josh Allen was all that effective today.
So let's turn to Russell Wilson, who, yes, I did boot off of the MVP stand. So he's the guy that Kyler most resembled, and he is now the guy who has lost three of his last four games. He played probably the worst game of his year, maybe the worst game in years plural that we've seen from Russell Wilson in this 23-16 loss to the Rams. This was the MVP frontrunner until this run of games. So are the Seahawks not who we thought they were, to go inverse Dennis Green here for a second, or are you letting them off the hook?
They are not who y'all thought they were. They're exactly who I thought they were. Like, I'm a defensive player. I like defense. I said all along that this team was not going to be good because their defense was historically bad. But defense isn't necessarily what killed them today, unless you're talking about the Rams defense. Another thing that I called, so I'm poking my chest out once again. I'm counting. That's what we do for a living. Let's not count all the times I was wrong, but we're going to count when I'm right. When I said Ramsey was going to take DK out the game and that the Rams defense was going to outplay this impressive, so far, Seahawks offense. And they did. And that was the difference in the game. Defense. Defense is always the difference.
So let's get to this Ravens-Pats game that we just finished watching, because the Ravens are your account, Dominique, on ESPN Daily. You are a former Raven. You're the guy we turn to for Lamar Jackson analysis. But this game in specific felt like it was occurring inside of like a Doppler radar system. The reigning MVP, the aforementioned Lamar Jackson, it was really hard to get a sense of how much better he actually might have been given the last several weeks of struggle that he's gone through. And the Patriots, meanwhile, they hang on to win 23-17 as this monsoon is bearing down upon all of New England at the very end. So based on what you saw from Baltimore tonight, are you starting to worry about them?
Not based on what I saw tonight. I mean, tonight was full of drop passes, fumbled snaps, missed extra points. Like, it felt like an unusually weather-impacted game. I don't think you can take much from a game like tonight. The Patriots were effective running the ball against the Ravens, which you might be surprised to see if you didn't recognize that Calais Campbell was out, LJ Fort was out, a linebacker for the Ravens. These are the guys who are the best on the Ravens at stopping the run. So the Patriots did run the ball well, but it wasn't like they dominated the Ravens team necessarily. The Ravens were in position to make several plays when the ball slips through Willie Snead's hands or there's a bad snap that causes a loss of multiple yards and puts the Ravens in a bad situation. I feel like the weather was more a problem today than the Patriots were for the Ravens.
So the Patriots leave this game having won their second straight game, and they are third in the AFC East. So are you still sprinkling some dust on New England's grave, or are you seeing signs of life from the Patriots?
What does sprinkling dust mean? Does that mean they're done, or does it mean they're coming back? What type of dust is it?
It means that you're putting them deeper into the earth, but maybe they can sort of like zombie resurrect themselves like Lazarus, as per Bill Belichick wants.
I don't know what any of that means, but I am not here for a Patriots resurrection right now. I think that Cam Newton showed some potential signs, but I still don't love this Patriots defense. They play well in this monsoon, but I think that their recipe for winning is going to have to be a power running attack and a great defense. They only have one of those, and that's not a great defense.
All right, coming up, I still need to get into Sunday's Jameis Winston sighting with you, and also Aqib Talib's debut as a broadcaster. And also, if the NFL's new plan for more diversity is actually a solution to their problem.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Jameis Winston might be taking the field here at quarterback. We talked about Drew Brees maybe being banged up in the first half. We've had no official word from the Saints. But it is Jameis Winston, the former Buccaneer, and a quarterback now for New Orleans.
All right, Dominique, I will admit to you that as soon as I saw everybody tweeting Jameis in all caps on Twitter midway through the Saints' pretty decisive 27-13 win over the 49ers, I did drop everything and just start watching. And that owes to the fact that last year with the Bucs, Jameis often seemed like he had both himself and his opposing defense on his fantasy football team. And a lot of smart people, Dominique, including our friend Mina, had been calling for Jameis to play more often even before Drew Brees suffered this rib injury that knocked him out of this game. So what did you see from Jameis? What do you expect from him going forward? Can the Saints be contenders with him if he is their full-time starting quarterback?
Absolutely. I know he was the number one overall pick. He has the talent. He was in Tampa Bay where he had three different head coaches, three different offensive coordinators. And this was pre-Lasix Jameis. So now he's also had his eye surgery and he's looking better. So he has all the skills with a good complement of skill players around him from Alvin Kamara to Michael Thomas to Emmanuel Sanders. And then you got Cook at tight end and you put on top of it possibly one of the smartest offensive minds in the game, and Sean Payton. I think that Jameis Winston is a different quarterback, but in some ways, he's a more explosive quarterback.
So that brilliant offensive mind you mentioned, Sean Payton, why haven't we been seeing Jameis to this point?
Well, because I think he also wanted Drew Brees to get this kind of farewell party, and Drew Brees is the quarterback that he's been with. He's had all the success that he's had as an NFL coach with Drew Brees, and they have a Super Bowl-ready roster. So I think Drew Brees is a guy that he trusts, and as high as I am on Jameis's ability, Jameis throws interceptions, and you won't find an NFL head coach who's comfortable with putting a guy out there who throws as many interceptions as Jameis. And working on getting those down is something that I think they weren't ready to start working on just yet, but maybe they have to figure that out immediately.
So Super Bowl readiness is not a term I would have used to describe the Miami Dolphins heading into this season. But it is interesting that today, Monday, is now the one-year anniversary of Tua Tagovailoa's hip injury that ended his college career at Alabama. And on Sunday, he ends up outplaying the other great rookie in his class, well, short of Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert with the Chargers. And the Dolphins are officially now 3-0 since Tua became their starter. So how dangerous are these Dolphins, Dominique, with Tua?
Very dangerous. Before Tua's first start, I picked them to win their division because I think their defense is very special. And that's why he outplayed Herbert, because he had the good privilege of going against the Bosa-less Chargers defense. Mm. And Herbert had to go up against that Miami Dolphins defense. And they were making plays all over the field, making Herbert uncomfortable, switching between man and zone. And their corners especially, I don't know why I wanted to focus on them, but their corners especially were outstanding. And I think that was the difference in today's game. And that is the reason why Tua will probably have the most successful career out of all the rookies coming into the league this season.
So let's get into your obvious bias for cornerbacks, because in this Washington-Detroit game, if not for a 59-yard game winner from Lions kicker Matt Prater, the story could have been Alex Smith, who was making his first start at quarterback in almost 2 years, almost an incredible comeback. But even if that comeback had happened, the real story, I think it's safe to say for both of us at least, is the fact that Aqib Talib was making his first start in the broadcast booth. And this is one of your fellow garrulous former cornerbacks, Dominique. And he was entertaining, to say the least. What went through your mind watching and listening to him work?
I was delighted. You said entertaining, to say the least. It feels like you didn't want to say what he was, which was fantastic. Like, I think that anyone who is criticizing him is criticizing grammar or polish. I'll take accuracy over grammar any day of the week. He knew the coverages, which is more than most play-by-play guys know.
Great route by McLaurin here. It looked like they're playing a two-man. Everybody's playing man under, two safeties deep. And the killer, the two-man, is outside breaking routes. So
doesn't matter what position they play. I see quarterbacks, Troy Aikman, all the quarterbacks who do it, they mess up coverages all the time. He nailed it throughout, and he understood the situation. And then on top of it, we got all excited about Tony Romo's energy. Like, he brought the energy. He got so hype when it seemed like we were going to get overtime. It got me excited for a game between two poo teams.
Overtime game for my first time in a booth, man. How about that?
Man, I got to roll with you more often, brother.
I loved having him out there. And I understand that we aren't used to hearing a guy who may not always use the proper pronoun in the proper situation or have all the great adjectives. But what I'm here for is not necessarily an English lesson as much as I'm here to learn about football and have the game broken down for me by someone who is close enough to truly understand it. And that's what we got.
In fairness to Aqib Talib, since you have this platform and you're on your soapbox, some might call it a high horse, what is your favorite Aqib Talib story?
I got him. Few Aqib Talib stories. The one that I'll tell, though, At the Super Bowl in Miami, last time we were allowed to leave and go places, we're in Miami, and I remember walking down the street and seeing Aqib Talib standing in front of a hotel with a guy next to him. And I just, like, give him the head nod. Like, we acknowledge each other. Like, we're football people. I'm in the media. You play. We're both corners. Give a head nod. He looks at me like he wants me to die. And then I'm, like, a little bit, like, not intimidated, but, like, all right, let me just keep it on moving. And then the guy who's next to him, who is bigger than him, and I guess one of his friends from back in the day, is, like, a big, kind of intimidating-looking guy, comes over and talks to him. He's like, hey, what's up? Yeah, he's busy right now, blah, 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 blah. And so it just hit me as I was walking away. Most celebrities have someone with them to, like, protect them as, like, a bodyguard.
Right.
No. Aqib has somebody with him to protect you. Because I started to slow down, like, confused why Aqib was giving me this dirty look. And a guy came over, and he did it so effortlessly. He's like, you do this all the time.
I have never even considered a reverse bodyguard. That is... Wait, did you ever get to the bottom of why, though, he was giving you the eyes in the way that he was?
Oh, yeah, because it's Aqib Talib.
Fair.
He just had no time for me, and I'm glad that he brought a bodyguard for me to be safe.
So I did want to get to a big deal that happened last week, Dominique, because you and I have been musing and talking offline about this league legislation that I find personally pretty fascinating. And it's this idea that the league has to evolve past the Rooney Rule somehow. And so last week, NFL owners agreed unanimously that if any team poaches a minority coach or executive from another team and makes them a head coach or a general manager in specific, the team that lost them, they get a special reward. They get two compensatory draft picks, both in the third round, coming in consecutive years. So, Dominique, the NFLPA still has to approve this rule before it's formally passed. It should be noted here that you were once the president of the NFLPA. So does incentivizing diversity with draft picks like this, does it seem like a solution to you?
I mean, I think it's a step in the right direction. It could be counterproductive, too, because I could imagine that some teams would not be interested in rewarding their opponents with more draft picks. It's something that could be a problem. I think you also have to reward the team, not necessarily reward, but incentivize the team that is bringing someone in also. And I think we all look at this the wrong way. We look at it as trying to make the candidates more attractive. I don't think that's what we're doing. We're trying to make the decision makers less racist. Like, we're trying to incentivize them to make the right decision. The candidates are out there. There are plenty of candidates who are capable. I think I could go down a long list, but right now we're looking at Brian Flores, which he created, him and Chris Greer, the most impressive turnaround in the past two seasons that we've seen in a long time. And that's because they're great coaches, not because they're Black, but because they're great coaches. And they may not have gotten those opportunities in previous years, and plenty of people like them aren't getting those opportunities because the decision makers have some either implicit or explicit bias that they can't get over. And if we have to bribe you with draft picks, so damn be it. This is to incentivize people to bring in lower level coaches and executives or front office staff. It's not necessarily incentivize them to get hired. If anything, like I mentioned before, it might disincentivize some teams from making a hire like that because they don't want to give their opponents some more draft picks. But I do think that maybe it will encourage people to build a better pipeline. And I think that's one of the criticisms or one of the explanations given for why the diversity at the top of football isn't where it should be. I think it's a faulty explanation, honestly, but I'm fine with it. Let's attack this problem because that's what it is, a problem. I'm fine with attacking it on every single level. So this is a piece of it. I don't think this will be the solution, just like the Rooney Rule wasn't the solution. But as long as we understand that we have to continue to add and build, I think that we can eventually, hopefully sooner than later, get to a point where the chances are equal.
So a third rounder, like, what does that really get you, though? I mean, who's ever made anything out of being a third rounder?
You must have Googled beforehand. You had to Google because you're not going to get out of me what you want. You want some anger? You want some frustration? You want me to feel disrespected? Because obviously the third round is where the gems is. In honor of my man Aqib Talib, who was a first round pick, but I was a corner drafted in the third round.
Dominique Foxworth, pick number 97 in the 2005 NFL Draft, a third rounder par excellence. Thank you for joining ESPN Daily.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it.
Okay, up next. Major American sports history was made on Friday, and it took a lot longer than it looks.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Here's another story I want you to know. It was around midnight on November 13th, 2003, inside the Biltmore in Phoenix during Major League Baseball's GM meetings. And Kim Ng was mad. She'd been at the hotel bar with her colleagues when Mets scout Bill Singer, the former All-Star pitcher, showed up drunk and approached her in front of all the executives present, wanting to know what she was doing here. Ng told him she was working. "What are you doing here?" Singer repeated. And Ng, then the assistant general manager of the Dodgers, identified herself as such. But Singer was undeterred. He asked where she was from. And Ng, who was born in Indiana and grew up in New York, explained herself again. "No, where are you from?" Singer insisted. Because of course he did. Because Asian Americans don't ever get to really be from America. And when Ng explained that her family originally comes from China, Singer proceeded to speak in that Ching Chong gibberish that is viscerally familiar to every single Asian person in the United States. But for a person who was decades into a big league career, that wasn't even the most maddening aspect of this stupid, awful night.
I was mad. You know, that I was now going to be known for having been harassed. If I was an Asian guy, would this be happening? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I would say that there's a greater chance that this would be happening because I was a woman.
Kim Ng became the first female GM in major American sports history on Friday when Miami hired her to run the Marlins. The date was November 13th, 2020, meaning that Ng also became the very first Asian American GM in baseball history, exactly 17 years after that stupid, awful night. And to be clear, it should not have taken this long. No woman in baseball had ever gotten a GM interview before Ng did in 2005. And after interviewing to be the GM of the Dodgers and the Mariners and the Padres and the Angels and the Giants, she came up empty every time. Experience was never the problem. Ng, who's spent the last 9 years with the commissioner's office, entered baseball in 1990 when she ran the radar gun as a White Sox intern. In 95, she became the youngest person and first woman to ever argue a baseball arbitration case, beating Scott Boras, the final boss of agents. In 98, she became the sport's youngest assistant GM with the Yankees, winning 3 World Series rings. And for decades, the sport looked at this overqualified Asian American woman like they looked at all women and all Asian Americans, and kept deciding that the top job was this bridge too far. But today, after 30 years in baseball, that changes. Ng officially has the job she has been chasing since 1990, running radar guns and then farm systems, and now, finally, her very own big league team. That is where Kim Ng comes from. And this, at long last, is what she's doing here. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.